Hello and welcome to Postgres FM, a weekly show about all things PostgreSQL. I am Michael, founder of PG Mustard. This is my co-host Nikolai, founder of Postgres AI. Hello, Nikolai. What are we talking about today?
Hi, Michael. We wanted to talk about one of my favorite topics, massive delete, I usually call it, but maybe you can call it somehow differently.
So yeah, I really like this. So when you say massive delete, do you mean deleting a lot of rows all at once?
Right, in one SQL statement. So, for example, 10 million rows, 1 billion row, or just 1 million. It's good already. Good enough to feel how bad this is for Postgres. So we can discuss in detail what's happening if you do it. I like this type of thing because it's not only bad, it's also good. And we can explore that as well, because if you do it on production, it's bad. But if you do it on purpose in some testing environment, it can be very helpful.
Oh, I see what you mean. So it's a useful tool for certain things.
Right.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I get it.
Stress test. Yeah.
So you mentioned this in a previous episode, that it would be good to cover this in more detail, and I was really interested. But I think it's important to say what we're not going to cover as well. So massive deletes, some people might also be thinking of like some other things that sound like deletes. Like some people often implement soft deletes, which would be like implemented via updates. We're not going to talk about that kind of thing. We're
right,
talking about only actual Postgres deletes at this point.
And some people complain why soft deletes are not already implemented by default in database system. Like natively. By then, maybe it's a good idea to have, but yeah, we will skip this topic. Soft delete, yeah. Maybe it's another episode because it has interesting nuances. Yeah, but let's talk about what's happening if you want to delete many, many rows, how to do it correctly on production, not to put your database on knees, and how to use it in non-production environments for something good, for good reasons. Right.
I like it.
Do you want to start?
Maybe with some use cases, like when are you generally seeing people do these like huge deletes? I've got a few examples I've seen, but I'd be interested in yours.
Well, usually people do massive delete by mistake, not understanding how Postgres works.
Sure.
And MVCC and so on. And they expect it's simple operation. They probably saw some warning that you shouldn't expect immediate reduction of disk space used. For example, you delete from some table and think, okay, I will free some space. No, you won't free some space because it's only part of the work. Another part is auto vacuum, which will need to actually delete that tuples. But what?
And even then, you won't see, and if you're monitoring disk space, you won't see that as free space again.
So it depends. It depends. Autovacuum also can truncate a relation if some page in the end is deleted. All tuples are deleted and vacuumed, so physically deleted already, right? If page becomes free, it will truncate it and it will reclaim disk space.
Yeah, okay. But right. I feel like those cases are the exception rather than the norm. I see a lot more cases where people are deleting a subset of data from a non-partitioned table and really surprised when their relation doesn't decrease in size. But just to cover like a few of the other basics, I think this is actually a topic that's coming up more and more because we have these like new privacy laws that require people to be able to like to have the right to be forgotten, and deleting data is quite a safe way of not having a data leak. Like the less data you have, the less data that can be leaked security wise. So I feel like there's these forcing functions. I think also people are starting to get serious about having data retention policies. So how long should we keep each type of data around for? So I think there are some of these use cases that mean this is coming up more. And in the past, at least in the last 10 years, I saw a lot more people kind of just storing everything forever and not really thinking about it. So I didn't know if this is something you're seeing more often or it's just an age-old problem.
Well, yes. So I think GDPR and everything, it's not that big because, like well, single user delete, it's not, it's usually like some fraction of the whole, right? But usually massive delete happens when we need to clean up and we understand there's some old data which is not super useful. We pay for it, and we need, like, we want to postpone the moment when we need to scale our instances, database instances, machines, and so on. In this case, like, in general, I would like to mention, before COVID, I went to VLDB conference, which is like conference I know since being a kid, basically, almost when I was a student learning database theory and so on. I've heard about it, this conference. So I went to it because it was very close in Los Angeles. And I remember a keynote, some researcher, she was presenting the talk, which was interesting. It was about delete, basically. She said, this is exponential growth of the total data volumes of data in our databases in the world. It was like, phew. Because storage becomes cheaper, we produce like a lot of data, like big data, huge data, and so on. Like, this is like some zettabytes or something. Like, it's insane curve, insane, with some forecast. And she said, we spent decades to learn how to store properly CID, not to lose data, reliable, highly available, and so on. Now it's coming time to learn how to clean up and delete. Understand which data can be safely deleted, how to delete it efficiently, and so on. And I was super inspired. I also did a talk at a conference because around the same time I had production incident. A senior engineer, backend engineer, with good understanding of analytical databases, actually, got a task to delete some old data, preparing for some marketing campaign, because like forecast was saying, we either need to invest a lot to upgrades, or we need to clean up before we do this huge marketing campaign. So he went to the production and just performed delete from table where created at older than 1 year. He estimated in advance that it will be 10 million rows. And we got an incident. Downtime, more than 10 minutes. Costed company a lot of money. I was super impressed. A lot of money. And he almost left the company himself because he was super embarrassed. And this was, like, at the same time, at this VLDB conference about delete, and this, like, I'm saying, like, we need something, right? We need, at least we need to educate people that delete should be split to batches. Of course, if you have good disk, maybe you'll be fine. But in that case, we had quite slow. It was some enterprise level, but some Sun, I think, or some old system. It was on premise, and also at the same time, I was advocating this company. Like I was helping them as a consultant with Postgres. Company was growing super fast, huge startup, and I was saying, guys, you do need to increase max wall size. 1 gigabyte is not enough. So with default setting max wall size, untuned check pointer, and quite slow storage, I think maximum throughput for writes was maybe 600 megabytes per second, maybe 500. It's not like current modern NVMe, which gives you like 2 gigabytes per second, for example. These two factors plus the idea, let's delete 10 million rows, it's not a huge number, right? So check pointer became crazy because a lot of what's happening. First of all, we find rows. I mean, executor finds rows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In that case, it was also unfortunate that it was not sequential pattern. So what, like rows were ordered by according to created at. So they start sparsely, and first you need to put Postgres needs to put X max value to this hidden system column. It needs to put current transaction, which deletes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Value to xmax column for first row, and the page becomes dirty. Right? Dirty means in memory we have different page than on disk. So we need to flush it to disk eventually. Check pointer needs to do it, basically, right? And then different row was different tuple, basically, physical row, right? Version of row in different page. So we dirty different page. So almost like if you need to update Xmax in 100 rows, it's like almost 100 pages already dirtied. Very inefficiently already because of this pattern of random access, basically. It's not random, but it's not sequential. This is the key, right? And then checkpointer sees, okay, I have max wall size 1 gigabyte, and it was Postgres, I think 9.5, 9.6. At that time, it means that real distance between two checkpoints was 3 times lower.
Only
300 megabytes. You can read in Igor Rogov's book Postgres Internals, very good explanation mentioning the improvements and like why it's not really even max wall size but 3 times smaller. Now I think it's either 2 times smaller or something, I already don't remember. So it means that checkpointer comes and says, okay, it's time already, we already accumulated too many buffers dirty, we need to put like to flush them to page cache first of all, and then pdflush will go and flush them to disk. So it starts working, producing a lot of I/O, and it converts to real disk I/O already. And then, boom, different row happens to this to be in the same page which just flushed. It was just flushed. It was already clean, but we update it again. I mean, we update different tuple in the same page, it becomes dirty again, right? And checkpointer says, okay, again, a lot of work.
So it's duplicating effort by flushing too excessively. Right. Is that what you're... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So checkpointer, distance between checkpoints was like, I remember now, like was like 20 seconds only.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, I learned that it's like, if I'm not mistaken, I think many years already passed, checkpoints can overlap sometimes for a couple of seconds. Like it's still happening, but it's already time to... It's insane. So checkpointer produced a lot of I/O, and disk couldn't handle this I/O, and database became unresponsive, and we had critical incident, like basically downtime, failovers, and so like it's insane. Everything became insane, and downtime was huge, and that's not good, right? But as I remember, there are two effects. Not only you need to flush the same page multiple times if you have this non-sequential pattern access pattern, but also once checkpointer or anything else made the page clean, we have different effect.
Full page images.
Yes. So full page images, full page writes. So since full page writes is on, it means that after checkpoint, if we visit with our change our delete this page again, it goes in full to the wall, right?
Whereas if it was in a previous, if it had managed to sneak into the previous before the next checkpoint, it would have been a much smaller amount of work.
Yeah. If we had, for example, huge max wall size like 100 gigabytes, we have enough disk space, we can afford it. We understand if we crash, startup time will be longer. Replica provisioning also takes longer because, like, to reach recovery point takes time, minutes. Yeah. And then in this case, we understand. And then in this case, even if we have not sequential access pattern, we visit the same page multiple times, not sequentially. And not only checkpointer will flush it just once instead of multiple times, but also only the first change will go to the wall as a full page. But subsequent changes will be just presented as a tuple.
Mm-hmm.
And this, it means volume generation decreases significantly if you do this. So it was helpful to me as a consultant because I finally found agreement that we need checkpoint tuning. It was the beginning of my practice in the US, so it was hard to me to find good arguments. But like this case showed, okay, I just did very good series of experiments. I'm a big fan of experiments. So if you just start experimenting with max wall size and run deletes each time, you just do this 1 gigabyte. This is the I/O for this massive delete, like 2 gigabytes, 4 gigabytes, you know, logarithmic approach. Mm-hmm. You reach 64, for example, or 128 gigabytes, and you can draw a good curve, right? Look how IO, and usually IO, if you also have monitoring, if this delete takes like a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, you can see in monitoring that you have plateau for IO because it's saturated.
Are you taking the total IO? So let's say you're doing the same delete each time and you're looking at total IO across the time and showing that there's less IO as we increase the...
I did several things in this experiment, and I think it's worth maybe a good how-to article or something. Actually, it was two phases, two parts of the whole experiment. First is to study this IO behavior and checkpointer behavior. So I did snapshot of PG-start PG-writer, which, as we know, until recent version, contains not only background writer, but also checkpointer and backend activity for cleaning dirty buffers. So I converted, as usual, I converted buffers to gigabytes, because this is how any engineer can start understanding what's happening. Yeah. If you say buffers, nobody understands, except DBAs, right? If you multiply it by 8 kibibytes, you have gigabytes, megabytes, everyone starts understanding. So I just showed that with default setting, checkpointer had a lot of IO, and also PG-start wall. Much more wall was generated. But I also made screenshots of monitoring showing that we had plateau saturating disk IO, disk write IO. But when we had already like 16 gigabytes, 32 gigabytes, we already see like spiky pattern up and down, and this is good. It means
because
we have
of batches. Why is it spiky?
Yeah, some batching, something like checkpointer. It's also like it's all of course checkpoint completion target. It's like close to one, so it should be spread. But it's like this is batching there, obviously.
Got it.
And this is good. We're not saturated. Plateau is bad, right? So
actually, it's a good point that this helps. This optimizer, like tuning the checkpointer, is helping with massive deletes, regardless of whether we batch or not. It's helping in the case where we don't batch, and it's helping in the case where we do batch. Is that right?
Well, right now I'm talking only about how we would tuning would prevent this incident. I think it would convert P1 or priority one or criticality one incident to P2. So basically, we have database is slow, but it's not down.
Great.
Because we just discussed this. We're much less wall produced, checkpointer has less IO to perform.
Okay. Great. I understand the spikiness now. We're talking about that's when the checkpoints are happening.
Yeah, the IO from checkpointer.
Great.
Disk IO was spiky, and it's good. It means we are not having plateau, we are not saturated. Of course, better if you know your numbers, you know the limit of IO your device, storage device can handle. And you can draw this line on graph and understand how far, like, basically, regular SRE practices starting from usage saturation errors should be applied here to study this incident and perform root cause analysis. And this was great. It was obvious that if we reach like 16 gigabytes or 32 gigabytes, we are in much better shape. We just need to have disk IO and also second phase of experiment. I think we had an episode about maximal size and checkpointer tuning. So second phase, I won't go into detail there, but second phase of you do need to understand recovery time in the worst situation. And I invented the term like double worst situation, double unlucky. So worst situation, if you database crashed right before checkpoint completes.
Yeah.
And double unlucky if at the same time you had massive delete or something like that. Sure. In this case, it means a lot of work during recovery. So, yeah, that's it, actually. This is how massive delete looks like in the wild, and you should avoid it.
Yeah, so how do we then go from we've gone from priority one incident to priority two. How do we make this not an incident at all?
Batching. So just split it to batches. I think there might be cases when logically you cannot afford splitting to batches because you must delete everything in one transaction. But in my practice, I never saw this. I mean, I always could convince people to split to batches and do everything in different transactions. So in this case, we need just to understand what is the ideal batch size for us. Not too small, not too big. Too small means a lot of transaction overhead. Too big, we just discussed. Yeah. But ideal.
I was going to say, I haven't seen a delete use case that, like, we're deleting stuff, right? We don't need it anymore. That's almost by definition, we don't need it anymore. So why would you need it to all be gone or none of it to be gone? That doesn't make sense to me.
Potentially, there might be a case when you don't want users to see parts of the old data.
Okay.
Right. But
so they want, case, you want them to not see anything, but you'd rather they saw everything than part of it.
Yeah, in this case, go and adjust application logic so the application cannot reach that data already, right? Even if it's present in database, but you hide it already, maybe like that, based on timestamps or something. So, but again, this is just a theoretical discussion. In practice, I didn't see any cases when we couldn't. Like, the benefits for Postgres with its MVCC model, benefits from batch deletes always much higher than like experiencing this pain and risks. So yeah, batches, and we know the ideal size of batches. We discussed it many, many times, starting from the very first episode we had almost 2 years ago.
So, and very recently in the Don't Do This episode, right?
Yeah. So ideal, my recipe is just try to be below 1 second, but maybe not below 100 milliseconds or 50. So this is ideal size to me based on human perception.
Yeah, you mentioned something in the recent episode about it degrading over time. So let's say you get a clone or you have a replica of production where you're testing batch sizes and you get the sweet spot. Maybe you find out that you can delete 5,000 rows in just under a second. And you think, let's go with 5,000 as the batch size. You
mentioned 1 hour later. Yeah. 1 hour later, you see the same delete already takes 1 minute. What's happening?
So I was going to ask, not only what's causing it, but how would you, like, do you run the test for longer, or like how do you think about that stuff?
Well, you just need to understand that when you delete or update, you produce dead tuples, and it means that only the first part of two parts of the operation is done. It's done synchronously by your SQL query, but there is a second super important part, which is vacuuming. So delete is not complete when you see a transaction committed. It's complete only logically, but physically we have these dead tuples, basically garbage, unless some transactions still need it, right? Mm-hmm. And you need to understand vacuum. And actually in the same company, to perform delete properly, of course, I split to batches, and then I was a big fan, like, oh, I want to create a simple query, which is basically stateless. I don't want to deal with remembering last ID or last timestamp of previous batch. Basically, no pagination, no pagination. I don't want to have pagination because they have a similar problem as pagination for selects showing huge result set split to pages to users. Similar problem here. Very similar because it's the same basically problem. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to do something like stateless, and I just relied on Postgres on some index. I checked indexes used, and then already in production I saw this degradation. So degradation was because of a lot of dead tuples, and AutoVacuum couldn't catch up with my speed of deletion. I also remember interesting thing. Since then I'm a big fan of single-threaded maintenance jobs. I implemented multiple threads originally, but then I saw that even single thread is too fast for vacuum, for auto vacuum, and we don't need parallelization here. Of course, parallelization in my case was based on a select for update skip locked, like fancy, super cool. Like it was maybe like 5-6 years ago. Like, let's do fancy stuff. We will have like five workers. Let's go. But you don't need it here. One thread is enough to clean up. Because otherwise you need to speed up vacuum somehow. And vacuum for a single table is always single threaded. You cannot have multiple workers cleaning up dead tuples from a single physical table.
Non-partitioned,
Or if it's partitioned, yes, they can work on multiple partitions at the same time. But if it's a single table, no. So
I want to come back to partitioning. But in the meantime, like, so a massive delete also has a big impact on, like, I was thinking about index-only scans, not for the delete, but for other, like, concurrent reads. Because let's say we're in a situation where we are deleting a lot of tuples from not necessarily random, but like lots of different pages, the visibility map is going to be, well, there's going to be a lot of pages that have changes and therefore can't be true index only scans. So I was thinking for that case, we might actually want to run a vacuum manually every certain number of batches.
Yeah, this is what I did. And I also thought maybe Yeah, I did. I did manual, not manual. I mean, my script did it. But after n batches, like 100,000 batches, vacuum.
And how did you determine n?
Ooh, good question. Well, experiments. So if you want to go stateless, and you know a lot of dead tuples will be a problem, because in the index you use on primary key or on the creation time step, create dead. This index also needs vacuum because it will be pointing to dead tuples, and that's why subsequent batches will be slower, degradation over time will happen. Mm-hmm. But if you vacuum, this, you get rid of these links to dead tuples, right? And it becomes good again. So based on that, applying rule, we want our transactions to exceed 1 or 2 seconds. Because users might notice some like big bad things, and when we have a long transaction, we also block. We also are some kind of a problem for all auto vacuum workers globally for our database. So, if you see, oh, it degraded to 2 seconds, this is the right time to run vacuum, right? But I eventually chose not to do vacuum. Actually, I had many iterations of my solution.
Yeah.
And finally, I gave up and decided to go stateful. So I performed just this key set pagination, just based on last timestamp. I select next batch based on that. It's super fast, even if we had a lot of dead tuples. So I don't care, because auto vacuum is good for skip. Pages that can skip. It's not like 10 or 15 years ago. It's already quite good. So multiple runs versus just single big run. This is a good question, by the way, worth exploring. Is it good to run vacuum quite often in this case versus let's run it just once? In terms of how low it will produce, in terms of how many disk operations in total, we can this is a good experiment to conduct and compare these numbers.
Well, and doesn't it depend a little bit on, like, I think it depends a bit on your workload, right? If you have no other concurrent users, running one vacuum is likely more efficient than running lots of small ones. But if you have other concurrent users and you're forcing heap fetches, then maybe your IO impact from those reads is, like, outweighs the duplicate effort on vacuum. Yeah. Or even when I say duplicate effort on vacuum, I guess we're talking about the same kind of a similar
here. If we see that we want to run single vacuum not frequently, we will leave with a lot of buffers which are out of visibility map. So and index-only scans will degrade. But this you add complexity here. In my case, I don't care about other users for now. I like this approach. First, you study the problem alone, and then you start adding what you did, like, oh, we have other users. Let's already understanding the problem, like, in vacuum, so to speak, in like,
single-user
mode, basically, right? Yeah. Then you start adding considerations. So what about other users? If you know how Postgres behaves, how your workload behaves for single-user situation, it's already better. You are much more confident when you start looking at others as well. Yeah, it's a good point. If we rely on index-only scans a lot, probably we should vacuum frequently to avoid heap fetches. You saw it in your plans at PGMaster quite a lot, right?
Yeah, it's quite a common one. It's not the biggest issue, but it is like, especially range scans where people are doing like returning a lot of rows or doing aggregates that rely on index only scans, on these kind of, you know, like hybrid workloads, set kind of analytical queries, they can degrade quite quickly in certain environments if you go from an index only scan across a few thousand pages to an index only scan with a few thousand heap fetches.
Yeah, so your deletes can be a problem for these. So selects might degrade because visibility map is outdated.
Exactly.
So yeah, more frequent vacuums might be good. It's interesting discussion, an interesting point as well. But in my case, I liked the, like, when I gave up my idea to be stateless, I liked so much. Like, I just remember this value. Yeah. And remember, I degrade it also to single-threaded approach. Forgetting about this select for blade skip locked. And so I just need one value always to remember. So easy. And then performance became very predictable, reliable, stable. So all batches were the same size and latencies were the same. It was like I could also interesting when you do it, you start thinking, oh, I want progress bar basically. I want to predict ETA, how much time left. And if it's degrading or not stable, this latency of each delete, you cannot predict reliably. But once you perform key set pagination here, you know your batch, like, it takes like 300 milliseconds each batch. Great. I integrated it into my SQL, this progress bar. It reported percentage and how much left and ETA.
Quick question on the ordering of batches, do you try and do any kind of natural... You mentioned created app being a little bit random, but I would have expected, unless the tuples are getting updated a fair amount...
Exactly, yeah.
The created app might be relatively natural
should
ordering.
Should be very good correlation between physical location and created app. You can check it easily. Select CTID, comma, created app, and order by created app, some limit... And you can see CTID is a physical location, and you can understand how correlated physical location is with created at. In my case, it did have a lot of updates in the past, so it was like basically everywhere in the table, and that's why incident happened actually. I think it
makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah. Oh no, it was I ordered by modified at. And I even considered creating index on modified at. But this is anti-pattern to me. Index on modified at is a problem because you start losing HAT updates, heap-only tuple updates, immediately. Because each update needs, usually by trigger or something, it changes this value. And if you have an index on it, you, by definition, you cannot, Postgres cannot implement heap-only tuple updates, and it means you need to deal with index write amplification problem, which is nasty. So
you're optimizing your delete, but you're messing up your updates.
So
now you are considering other users.
I remember I went deeper. I decided, okay, honestly, I don't want this index to be built. I know it will bite me back. Because of heap-only tuples, I don't want to lose them. I checked statistics and I saw we have good ratio of them among all updates. We have a lot of HAT updates. So I decided, you know what I decided? I decided to rely on created at index, but then somehow perform logical with modified at based on partial correlation. It was something crazy. It worked quite well. I don't remember details, but I did something like some tricks there. Avoiding this, like at first I already coordinated index creation with guys. They said, oh yeah, let's do it. But then I said, no. In different company, like 1 year before that, I already had this mistake done. I suggested some index and then degradation of updates happened because of we lost HAT updates. Actually, that incident led me to the idea we need to verify all changes holistically, checking all queries, ideally, what we have. And this led this experimentation approach and so on. It's all connected and interesting. But maybe let's skip this. And since we almost out of time, if you have questions.
Two more ones. I guess they're not quick, but when we're done with this large delete, what do you are there any kind of maintenance tidy up tasks that you recommend doing? I was thinking, like, we did a whole episode on index maintenance. I think rebuilding indexes concurrently might be sensible.
This question exactly is a good bridge to what I wanted to discuss as the last topic. I wanted to discuss how massive delete can be useful in non-production. And let's talk about this. Why your question is a bridge? Because and now I remember very well that in my career, I forgot about this many, many, many times. Delete doesn't touch indexes at all. This is the key. So delete, indexes are not touched at all during delete. Delete just puts xmax, that's it. And if transaction is considered as committed, then vacuum will remove this. And also if no other transactions need this version, they already in the future. In this case, tuple will be deleted. And also links to this dead tuple and index will be deleted asynchronously by vacuum. But by our backend is not dealing with indexes at all. It only needs to use one index to find the scope of work, the tuples we need to touch. Oh, well, also during planning, as we know, all indexes are considered by a planner and access share lock is acquired. So I don't see any index maintenance here at all.
Well, I was just thinking about them being, let's say we deleted 10% of our table.
You're right. Right. So if we don't do frequent vacuuming.
Even if we do frequent vacuuming, there'll still be like 10% bloat, especially if it's like created out or something where we're deleting the old data.
Yes. Vacuum doesn't rebalance B3. So B3 will be in worse shape, probably.
Yeah.
If we deleted the big fraction of the table data, we probably need to consider, we need to check bloat in indexes and probably will need to rebuild them. But I already got used to relying on automatically rebuild jobs, which we suggest implementing on weekends or something. So.
But this feels like a good time to reconsider. Like, anyway, it felt worth mentioning. I know you want to bridge to that one, but I had one more quick one. And that's like more and more I'm thinking about some of these use cases are deleting, like a multi-tenant SaaS application wants to delete a single tenant. And if you've partitioned, like I was thinking about partitioning and detached, like another way of avoiding big deletes is if you can just drop a whole partition.
Skype implemented this like three partitions for queue-like workloads, three partitions, and then like round robin approach, truncating when it's possible. It's much faster. It's much better. No job for many components, and it's good.
Yeah. Cool.
I agree. But, and indexes are on partitions. They are like a physical, and if it's truncated, it's also truncated. So great. Yeah. And let's touch a little bit the last topic. Why delete is useful.
Yes.
So I already was like, you know, database lab and ZFS, like branching, think cloning and iteration starting from the idea of experimentation. It should start from the same point. In each iteration, you're comparing things. You need to compare apples versus apples, right? Always apples to apples. So each iteration must start from the same state of database. And this is difficult if table is huge, database is huge, and you want to test it on big hardware. And in case of single threaded behavior, we can like, if we don't care about checkpoint or vacuuming and so on, usually like thin clones database lab engine provides are great. If you just study plans and so on. But in this case, we deal with like, we need to consider the same file system and we need to understand checkpointer behavior, wall, like everything. Vacuum. So we need a dedicated clone when we perform this experiment for checkpoint tuning and to study this behavior. And in this case, for this tuning, I found it super cool. This kind of workload can bring us very good, interesting tool. So we just, if we perform massive delete but don't commit, we roll back. Physical layout remains the same. I mentioned it multiple times in previous episodes, and this is super cool observation. You can just delete rollback, begin delete rollback massively. This puts good pressure to your wall system, right? Checkpointer, like, it's cool. And it means that, of course, for vacuum, it won't do anything because transaction marked as rolled back. So even Xmax is already updated. The tuples survive, they still alive. But Postgres generates a lot of wall for such workload. It also puts pressure to a backup system, to replication system, and also a checkpointer has a lot of work. So it means you are testing, like you can stress test many Postgres components just with this kind of workload. And I know we mentioned last week, right? We had Sai as a guest.
Yeah.
I suggest who haven't watched that episode, it was super interesting discussion about logical replication with PureDB founder Sai.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mentioned that this is exactly how I found that we can easily reach and saturate single core on wall sender. Wall center. So you just delete million rows, roll back. Delete million rows, it spams wall. And wall sender hitting 100% of single vCPU and is becoming bottleneck quite quickly. Fortunately, on production, as I mentioned, we don't observe. I couldn't find such situation, but in non-production, it's easy to reproduce. So I found this very handy tool to stress test Postgres and for checkpointer tuning and so on. That's why massive delete not only bad but also good. But only being rolled back.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny and like exciting that physical layout doesn't change of table? You delete it, roll back, but it's the same.
This is one of those things where, like, if you talk to Oracle guys, you'll get them sweating by this point because of a different implementation. Because it's only because of Postgres' specific MVCC implementation. Because in Oracle they have the undo log. It's like the opposite trade-off. So it's so interesting that the implementation details are so... It's good to know them in order to work out how to test things.
Yeah, Postgres is expecting you to perform rollbacks often. So
yeah, it's good to make use of it when it's advantageous.
Right. So tuple remains in the same spot in the page. Doesn't shift unlike in other systems, but still Xmax is updated, so page becomes dirty and must be flushed to disk.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
makes sense.
Yeah, I think we explored it quite well enough, quite deep. Takeaways. Takeaways. First, perform checkpointer tuning. Watch out our episode about that.
Yeah.
And if you prohibit massive deletes, perform deletes in batches. Roughly like not longer than 1 or 2 seconds. Unless you don't have users who like deal with your database a lot, and maybe you can go with like 30 seconds in this case.
Well, at least consider batching and some experiments.
I just wanted to have some rule, and for regular OLTP, 1 second is a good rule.
Yeah, great. I like it.
Yeah,
good. I think it's like a healthy recommendation as well. Like even if you wouldn't go down, or even if you wouldn't have like degradation of like that users would notice, it's just an unhealthy thing to do, like to go excessive and then like it's kind of like extremes where if you can keep things more level, you probably see better things.
Yeah, and a couple of more takeaways is vacuum. Don't forget vacuuming, regular vacuum. Effects about index-only scans we discussed. Maybe you want frequent and quite aggressive vacuum, like to go faster, more I/O consumed, and also partitioning.
Yeah.
Maybe your massive delete is just truncated. In this case, all those negative effects can go away. Yeah.
Yeah, love it.
Good.
Thanks so much, Nikolai.
Thank you, Michael. See you next time.